is Siren FM.
Minus 1 degree centigrade. Well, probably just similar to the kind of weather that Jean Bruce Scott is experiencing.
Californian sunshine, Native American joy, and the finest Airwolf helicopter pilot and Magnum PI naval officer ever. It's Jean Bruce Scott, now live on the midweek drive for Siren 107.3 FM.
Hurrah! Because we know, Jean, no matter how traumatic the news might be, as long as Caitlin O'Shaughnessy's on the case, all will be well with the world.
Thank you, Alex.
It's true. It's very true. There was one soul who actually was devastated she couldn't actually be on the programme today, and that's Tarina. Because Tarina, who works for Lincolnshire County Council, even had her own incarnation of a cello and indeed Ray-Ban sunglasses and indeed a sort of a mournful look that she was going to actually say, because she was a major Airwolf fan. And I said, one day it's all right, you will be able to speak to the Jean Bruce Scott in person. I'm sure it'll work. Who knows? Perhaps you might like to actually see Jean Bruce and Randy Reinholtz with Native Voices in Lincoln if we can get $20,000 together. And why not, indeed? You see, we connected those.
Indeed?
Exactly. We seamlessly worked through that whole process, because there's so much good stuff that's actually happening with Native Voices. But for the moment, let's just share the whole premise of Native Voices, because I was talking to some of my Level 1 historians here yesterday about the early... I suppose, colonials, you know, even mentioning things like Roanoke and the sort of the missing colony, and where we actually have a sort of spread from America, from Europe to America, the Native Americans and so on. But share with us how Native Voices, of which you are the co-founder, together with the wonderfully legendary, equally wonderful Randy Reinholtz, why that is such an important theatrical company. And obviously Native Voices at the Autry is an essential sort of aspect in terms of the things that you do.
Sure. Native Voices came about because there weren't many Native stories on the American stage. And so Randy and I started Native Voices at the Autry to work with Native playwrights and theater artists to develop new plays for the American stage and eventually produce them. We've produced, Off the Rails will be our 27th production. It is a world premiere, and it's actually a culmination of a lot of ideas Randy's had for many, many years about how to tell the story of strength and resilience in Native people. The last part of trying to... rid the United States of Native Americans was what became the American Indian boarding school system. And so they had fought the Indian Wars, and they had taken a lot of land and replaced Native people, taken them off their land and put them onto reservations. And the last set of questions essentially was very similar to what ultimately happened in Nazi Germany, which was what do we do now? Do we continue with war and the annihilation of an entire people, or do we try to find a way to assimilate them, or what do we do now? And one idea was to quote-unquote kill the Indian and save the man, which was the beginning of the American Indian boarding school. And they took children forcibly from families, tribal communities, reservations across the United States, and placed them in what was essentially a military, quote-unquote, boarding school, where they worked for their living. They provided all of the living for the boarding school itself. They created... goods and materials that then the government sold and kept the profits from. And essentially they were training Native Americans to go to work in the serving class. And in that way they were thinking they were, quote-unquote, saving them. So it's a very, very painful and difficult story in our American history, and certainly a devastating story in Native American history. So Randy has taken these elements and put them together, and in his particular story, the Native Americans take the history, and we've asked the question, how in the world did anyone survive all of the things that happened to them back in that 50-year period and the 25 to 30 years before that? What got them through? What was their resilience? And how did we go from 200,000 of the left of the Native population, which had been estimated as up as high as 13 million, how did we go from 200,000 in 1886 to the millions that we have now? Who survived and how did they survive? So in his story, the Native Americans and women turn history on its head, and we see how strong these people were, what they were fighting for, and how they were fighting for it. So we have five lead Native American characters, each one very unique, very different. Again, part of Randy's way of telling the story is to also say not all Native Americans are exactly the same. Everybody is unique and different, and they all approach the subject from a different point of view. And believe it or not, in doing so, they turn history on its head and find a way that they come out the other end, and we actually have some humor in the play, which is also one of the strong points of the Native culture is their humor. So that is a long explanation of what the play is about and why Randy's doing it and where we came from.
I think it was perfectly formed in every sense of the word, and just looking at the sort of notion of the United States moving from colonies to superpower and so on, something which my colleague Finn Pollard, who you did meet when you were over in Lincoln a couple of years ago, Jean, was very interested in terms of that. Emma, thoughts from yourself on what is a kind of amazing, staggering tale that we often don't, you know, we do forget.
Yeah, it sounds like a really fantastic thing to be doing, and I wanted to know, actually, how do you feel about being a part of working towards this project? Like, does it make you feel quite good and uplifting that you're bringing light to this really important part of American history?
It does, and I'll tell you, as we started to approach this topic a couple years ago, we all found it just very painful and devastating, and we did a lot of research on it. Randy and I also went and visited Genoa, Nebraska, which is where he's set his play at the American Indian Boarding School there in Genoa. And we thought, how in the world can we tell this story? And as we started to tell it and we started to find ways to deal with parts of it humorously, we also started to work with our ensemble. And what we kept hearing from the ensemble members, we have 35 members in the Native Voices Artist Ensemble, was that we need to find ways to tell these kinds of stories in such a way that a non-Native audience can watch them and not feel guilty, but hear the story. And so I think that's our greatest triumph. We did a first look play in September, and our short play festival also centered on stories from the boarding schools, and now we're doing Off the Rails. And so far, the response has been phenomenal. We usually do a talk back after all of our events, and you figure maybe half the audience is going to stay. They do for us. They all stayed. They sat in their seats, and they wanted to ask more questions, and they wanted to know more about it. And they were so very grateful to learn this part of history that is not in any history book, and that most of the American public doesn't know about. So it's very gratifying, and it's very exciting, and to see Off the Rails come to fruition is really, really quite an accomplishment.
Eleanor, any thoughts from your own point of view as an English student over here and finally undergraduate and on what Jean's been putting together in terms of the dramatisation of this heart-rending tale in many ways?
Yeah, well, I just think it's really wonderful that that, as you were saying, you are putting together something that isn't well known, that really should be more well known, and I'm just really upset that I can't go and see it.
But you see, that's the point. You may be able to, because we are looking to seriously get native voices over to the United Kingdom. Isn't that right, Jean Bruce Scott?
Absolutely. Mm. We could bring the five leads, and you could populate the stage with the other. There's a total of 19 performers in this particular piece, so we could cast everybody from Lincoln with these five Native American actors and put that show on right there in Lincoln.
Exactly.
That would be fantastic.
Support Native voices in LA. It's something we've talked about. We talked about a couple of years ago, you're here, and we're looking to work through it. I want to give a few mentions as well, Jean, to some of the wonderful artist ensemble people that you've actually been Facebooking about. Brian Westcott, of course, who, would you like to just share what Brian Westcott's been actually doing in terms of the Native voices at the Autry Artist Ensemble material?
Well, Brian was very active in both our short play festival and the first look series. He's an Alaska native, and he works all the time up there, traversing all of Alaska and out into the bush and the villages. And he's doing three plays right now. He's doing a short play festival with Dark Winter Productions. Dark Winter Productions is actually a group of playwrights that I worked with at the Alaska Native Playwrights Project, and they started their own theater company, which makes me ever so happy. I'm thrilled to death when people, go and start their own companies and carry on the work. And then he's going into Measure for Measure in Fairbanks, and then he's going back on tour for the sixth year with the Winter Bear Project, and that project is about teen suicide out in the bush, and is a very important and vital story to take into the villages. After they do the play, they also do quite a bit of talk back, and they have resources for people. So suicide in the bush and in the villages in Alaska is off the charts, rampant, and actually the highest in the nation. So the work that Brian's doing, both as a theater artist and as a humanitarian, is absolutely fantastic.
Jessica?
I think Native Voices at the Autry is, very important, also inspirational. I think that there is more emphasis on the black slavery, and I don't think many countries focus on
The indigenous population.
Yeah, exactly. Think about the Aborigines, maybe even the Maoris as well. So I think what you're doing is really good, shining the light on things that aren't so, I suppose, popular to look at. I just got a question for you. Why did you get involved with this? Why did you choose to...
Personally, I'm not a Native American. I'm married to Randy Reinholz, who is a member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. And so when we first started, we were teaching at Illinois State University, and he ticked off that little box that said he was Native American on the little cards that we sign when we start work at a government, or actually, I guess, any work in the United States. And so the theater department there had asked him to find a Native play, and Randy and I both had worked in the theater and in new play development as actors. So we thought, sure, that would be easy, and we'd call around, and we'd come up with the perfect play, and everybody would be happy. And when we called all our friends who were literary managers or artistic directors of regional theaters, they said, we don't have any Native plays, but if you find one, we'd love to read it. So we put the word out on what at that time was called the Moccasin Telegraph. It wasn't quite as efficient as today's internet, but we did get about 30 or 40 submissions that year. Quite a few of them from Canada, who was a bit ahead of us on the Native theater trail. And we brought five playwrights to campus that year to do a festival of new plays. And it was a great success, and we had over 130 students involved, and it was quite phenomenal. And the selection committee chose a play from that particular festival called Now Look What You Made Me Do, which we produced the next year and also presented another 5 plays in readings. And that was the beginning of Native Voices. And since then, we've been to Pennsylvania and New York and Toronto and Vancouver and Alaska and Australia and Great Britain and Mexico. And
it just gets better and better. It gets better and better. And indeed, we also vote.
And I'm getting tireder and tireder.
No. I just actually... images of Jean Bruce Scott there we can see from Airwolf through Native American Voices, etc., all sorts of others. And in fact, there's even a shot of your good self in the role in Magnum PI. So there we are, classic sort of set up there. All great material to actually access, Emma, when you sort of have a moment to YouTube or various other bits and pieces. Carolina Rojas, I think, also is a mutual contact who came via Phil Leonis, our good colleague in Los Angeles, who joined us on the show recently. So we need to move now, of course, Jean, to how do people get in touch with Native Voices at the Autry? What's the best way if they want to actually support the fabulous work that you're actually doing and help you raise, you know, the capital to actually ensure that the good work continues to grow and expand?
You can support us on Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. We have a campaign right now for Off the Rails, and to support the Native Voices Ensemble, that would be the best way. You can actually win an afternoon at the Autry, seeing the museum, having lunch with Randy and I for yourself and 3 pals, and then see the show and meet the cast.
And I have to say, that is a priceless experience. Having lunch with Randy Reinholtz and Jean Bruce Scott, quite simply, priceless, capital PRICELESS.
Yes. And if you're really gung-ho, and I think, Alex, this is something you should fly to America and do because... you can actually play Buffalo Bill in Off the Rails.
Uh-huh.
That is also one of the perks.
So you see me as Buffalo Bill then, do you, Jean? Is that something you...
I do.
Yeah?
Yes, I think you'd have a great time. He's got one of the best lines in the show. I won't tell you what it is, but as we've been workshopping the show, every time he comes on stage, he gets the biggest laugh of the evening, and he really wraps up the whole story. So... Buffalo Bill is a great character to play.
I'm honoured and indeed flattered almost beyond compare for that particular area. So we shall work our way through that. Jean, it's been fabulous as ever, touching base with your good self and sharing some of the thoughts of the excellent work that you're doing with Native Voices at the Autry. Emma, go on. The last two questions, we'll keep them true. Well, I don't know. You could vary them this time around because Jean hasn't experienced the new suggestions.
The new suggestions.
Yeah. Which basically, Jean, have you ever been chased by a wild animal? Or indeed, have you ever tasted sour milk? I don't know if you want to say yes or no to either of those, but have you ever been chased by a wild animal?
I have been chased by a wild animal. Oh. I was actually attacked by a deer in the redwoods. Yes, I had on an orange sweatshirt, and the rangers thought that was the reason. He ran just across this meadow and threw me up into the air with his antlers.
Oh,
I broke a couple of ribs, but it didn't stop me from still loving deer, so that's fine. And as far as having tasted sour milk, of course, I have accidentally taken a sip of that. Well,
William Coles is actually onto something with
these
questions.
I think these questions add culture to the show.
So. Let's use the standard ones as well. Emma, go on.
Okay, also, as well as those fabulous questions, have you enjoyed your time on the show this evening?
I always enjoy my time. I love spending time with you guys, and I cannot wait to get back to Lincoln.
Fantastic. That's a round of applause, I think, to Jean Bruce Scott.
Yeah.
Absolutely. She's already answered the second question, but yeah. Jean Bruce Scott, we will hopefully return. Yes?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Just look at me now. Because I'm tired of yelling, look at me now. Are they only used too late?
Most of the time people
lie. Sorry is a word that only ever means forgive.
Well, it may have other meanings as well, of course. The Moody Blues and Sorry. Somebody who never has to apologise in any way, shape or form because she's got perfect manners and indeed is a classic and contemporary jazz singer and songstress extraordinaire. That would be Kerry LeBurn. How are you, Kerry?
Oh, good evening. Great to speak to you again.
Excellent. Of course, we last spoke when you were performing live at the fabulous Burley Horse Trials, if I recall.
Yeah, that's right. It's a very different time of year to be speaking to you now, but I'm certainly hoping to get back to Burley Horse Trials later again this year. But focus at the moment is on the first part of this year and what I'm going to be doing with my singing, the first 6 months.
Last week, we actually gave a first airing to J'ai deux amours. And indeed, that was actually it was subjected to a very significant aspect. It was the Jessica Ward critical analysis. This is not just England, it's New Zealand as well. And Jessica, what did you make of J'ai deux amours?
Well, I loved it. Or maybe I should say j'adore.
So it's thumbs up so far, Curry, from Jessica at least.
Okay, lovely. Do you want me to talk a little bit about that song?
I think we can do that. Or should we actually play it for our two fellow midweek drivers? So I don't know. Emma, did you hear this at the number?
I don't think I did, actually. I was listening to the show. What point did you play it?
I can't remember.
I might have.
I think
heard
you'd
it.
Actually gone to shorthand.
Yes.
Actually gone to shorthand or one of those two things.
Okay.
Eleanor, you haven't. So
no,
it's,
but
it's
I'm very
all,
interested
all
to
new.
Hear it.
Well, it's 2 minutes, 54 seconds of sheer wonderment.
I'm very excited.
If you're okay,
now.
Kerry, stay with it, and then we can actually have a little postscript after. Well, in fact, would you like to translate? Because, I mean, I have two loves. I have two.
Or two loves have I.
Two loves have I.
Oh. On dit qu'au-delà des mers. Là-bas sous le ciel clair, il existe une cité. Oh, séjour enchanté. Et sous les grands arbres noirs, chaque soir, vers elle s'en va tout mon espoir. J'ai deux amours, mon pays est Paris. Par eux toujours, mon cœur est ravi. Manhattan.
Deserves a round of applause.
Yay!
Yeah. Thank you.
Impressed. Okay, Emma, questions from yourself.
Yeah, so I'm guessing you're part French.
I have a French surname. Okay, I must have French descent, I think, but I'm actually not French.
Oh, really? Well, what was it that made you want to sing that song in French?
Right, so that song, J'ai des amours, is actually a French song. And there's really two reasons. One is that I do speak French, and so I was trying to combine my jazz singing with my, you know, love of language, and particularly the French language. And the second reason is Madeleine Peru. I don't know if you've heard of her. She released that song on her Careless Love album in 2004, and it really resonated with me. It's interesting because most songs, as we know, are about a love of between men and women, but this song is very much about two loves, her love of Paris and the love of her country. And so, you know, it's fairly jingoistic as a song, but I quite like that concept. She's really singing about her, about Paris and her country. And Madeleine herself, she's a contemporary jazz singer. She grew up in the Latin Quarter in Paris, so that's where she was first recognised, I understand.
Interesting, looking at the photograph of yourself with Ed Wellman there, of course, at the Butlander of Burley horse trials, heading into all sorts of other adventures there, which was a grand time indeed. But it's worth pointing out as well that in terms of the French connection that you got there, you don't have any connection with Jean-Marie Le Pen. It's important.
No, not as far as I know.
Nice, you know, sort of clarify that, because you don't know what could happen there. I look very worried on that particular photograph. I don't know what would happen. But still, never mind. Eleanor, thoughts from yourself?
Well, I'd just like to say you have a very beautiful voice and you've mastered the accent really well. I was going to ask, what does the song particularly resonate with you? Is there something in particular about Paris that you love?
No, France in general, to be honest. I'm a closet Francophile, I think I'd like to call myself. And, I mean, I have friends and colleagues in France, and, you know, ultimately I think my aim is to eventually live there somewhere rural, but that will probably be a retirement plan. But it really is about, French is such a beautiful language, and so, you know, I'm glad I've done it justice, and I know a few French colleagues have listened to it and said, yeah, it's okay, Gary, it's not too bad.
Not too bad.
I think it's very good.
Not too bad. Have an interesting event and looking for a singer. Let's talk. Interesting. I sort of invite on the website. Would I just talk a bit more about that, Kerry?
Oh yes, absolutely. What my website and what I'm doing.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, my offering is to sing primarily jazz, but I also sing vintage, and obviously vintage is a fairly wide term these days, but I really class that as anything from the 20s up through to about the 60s. So I get involved in all sorts of things, really interesting things, from vintage tea parties to the Goodwood Revival, particularly was a great event for me last year. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Looking at the heads up on the website, 3rd of February, coming up very soon, of course, you're at the Woodmancote pub in the Woodmancote West Sussex area. That's a tea party. We've also got on 21st of February at the Belmore Lodge Care Home in Lymington. The lady sings at Belmore Lodge Care Home. Bognor Regis Theatre Club, bridal show. I don't know about the private party. That's quite interesting, on the 16th of April. Also a private party at Fairham in Hampshire. Floral Fringe Frere on the 30th of May. It's all looking very good.
Yeah, in fact, it was quite interesting. I got off to a bit of a slow start, really, in January, and I was thinking, goodness me, not much coming through. And all of a sudden, just over the last couple of weeks, it's just, you know, really blossoming. So the diary is getting busy, but if anybody wants me for an event, they need to book me fairly quickly. The other thing that I'm doing is I'm exploring plans to sing with an acoustic group. So I'm trying to put together a small jazz trio, jazz quartet. So I'm at the moment just starting plans or collaboration with some musicians. So typically I'm looking, got a sax, keyboardist, and we'll have probably a percussion. So that's going to be another offering in 2015, but probably a bit later on this year once we've got our set repertoire in order.
Jessica.
Your song, C'est très fantastique. Have you always been a singer? And who inspired you to carry on with your singing?
I sang, goodness me, at school, but, you know, only in the choir. And then once I was a bit older, I actually started doing musical theatre, but only in an amateur way. What I found, though, was a lot of these musical theatre groups are very political, and I work full time and have enough politics in the working environment, so I decided to actually start singing in my own right. And it was actually somebody I met in Tenerife, who's a Frank Sinatra Rat Pack type tribute person, just chance meeting, got talking to him, and he said, well, look, why don't you try doing what I'm doing, which is singing, you know, on my own, using backing, and see how you go. So I decided to kind of take the jazz genre, because I really enjoy that mostly, and develop that as an offering, with some French singing in there, of course, as well. And it took off. Started 2 years ago, and it's been fantastic. It really has, and I've met some wonderful people along the way.
There we are. And she's even been brought to the midweek drive as a result. It's fantastic. So, Kerry,
well, I'll tell you what I should say. I actually had a meeting when I did a good revival off with Chris Evans, the radio DJ.
He's rather late for his shows, we gather, these days. He doesn't quite get there in time, and he has to be covering. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Mm. Well, it was a wonderful endorsement. He actually came up to my area where I was singing and picked up one of my singing cards and said he was looking at potentially using me as a carpet, which is, we'll probably never do two major events this year.
It's all good, and if he's got any sense, he will. In fact, I'll get on
that
straight away.
Well, I hope so. I'm still plugging away at that, but we'll see.
Kerry LeBurn and Carfest. If not, we'll get you for the link at your show. Anyway, Kerry, it's been fantastic touching base with your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the Midweek Drive?
I have indeed, and thank you very much for the critique from the ladies in the studio there.
So they don't take prisoners, you know. Call it like it is. So I take it then we can look to connect with you again in the very near future?
Yeah, great. That'll be super. Look to update you in sometime in the future.
I wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. I wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention. I wish I had the wherewithal to attract your attention.
So we were talking earlier with Ed Fortune from Starburst magazine, of course, about the wonderful events and festivals that are actually there, including a plug for SF Ball 21, 6th to the 8th of February 2015 at Grand Harbour Hotel at Southampton. And a couple of weeks ago, making her debut on the Midweek Drive, we had a young lady who effectively came into our radar at the DigiCon, where she was actually portraying a Black Canary amongst a whole heap of other goodies, etc. And Fine Souls. We're talking about the super heroine sounding very own Gwyneth Griffiths. Gwyneth, you're back with us, professional cosplay extraordinaire. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much.
Very good indeed.
Been at work today.
Well, there you go. That, and indeed, I gather, about to get married in the next few weeks as well. Very exciting.
This is true, yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
But are you going to go? Is it going to be a cosplay wedding? I mean, it's got to be a question that needs to be asked. You know, will you go there as Natasha Romanoff from the Black Widow? Will you actually go there as a character from Stargate or from what will the sort of thing be? Or will you go traditional? Because who knows what could happen?
Actually very traditional. Oh. I did want some stormtroopers, but no, I'm not allowed.
What, not even having a stormtrooper? No, cancel it. It's wedding. I mean, how can you have
maybe the ushers could be stormtroopers. That would be quite good.
I just find that maybe you don't get a wedding without stormtroopers. Inconceivable.
Exactly.
Lord above.
So it's very, very normal, very traditional.
Even
everyone's
the theme.
The theme is all normal. Nothing
wow.
of the ordinary.
Well,
I think she's bluffing. She's trying to hide something.
I think so. You're not sort of set on that particular thing, are you? Okay. Emma, you've just started in a sense. Yeah, it's not cosplay as such, although you did go as a very fetching Harley Quinn.
Was for Halloween.
Yeah.
I went as Harley Quinn. When my first Comic-Con, I didn't actually dress up as anything.
No, very sad. I don't
horror.
Either.
I wore a Sherlock T-shirt. Does that count? I thought I should, you know, show some side of geekiness, but not too much.
What do you think, Gwyneth? A Sherlock T-shirt?
I wouldn't say it counted, but it's good to dress up in a T-shirt. It's quite daunting when you first go to a convention to dress up.
So, how do you actually become a professional cosplayer? I want to know more.
It's a weird one, because I mean, it just means that I get hired to do events, basically. I make costumes and people want them for events, and I go...
Well, I mean, you say that very glibly, but I mean, we've, in terms of your profile, we've got a wonderful sort of shot. In fact, I've just cut off the head there from that point of view, only accidentally, of one of the characters from Frozen that was sort of around from that perspective. In fact, we'll move into the photos area and just have a little perusal of that basis. Emma, are you considering this as a possible when you get your journalism degree?
I could offshoot
the whole thing.
I love dressing up, and I always have from a young age. When I was really little, I thought I want to be an actress so I can dress up in lots of costumes. But I don't know if I could be as brave as you, though.
Black Canary, very, very fetching costume.
Yeah.
Very good. Always nice.
I'm very shy.
Yeah, how long does it take you to make the costumes? A lot of effort must go into that.
Yeah, some of them are very quick, like take a month if that. Other ones take half a year.
Oh my gosh. So, a lot of pre-planning.
Yeah, Black Widow took, about 6 months.
Oh my goodness.
Was it the leather, or was it just something sort of, I don't know, it's very big. We've actually got a sort of cosplay team that we've actually got there, which I can take a Doncaster from that point of view. Your Ghostbusters, of course, Zool. Fetching Zool from that point.
Oh, I've just remembered I have dressed up as a superhero before as well. Just remembered I once went to a party as a female Green Lantern.
Very good.
So I'm getting there.
Yeah. In brightest day and blackest nights, no evil shall escape Emma's sight. Let those who worship evils might beware her power, Emma Tinson's might.
Wow, that was amazing.
Jessica, you're a bit bemused by this, I can tell. But,
I think this looks like so much fun. Yeah. What costume is your favourite? The ones out of the ones you've worn?
I love doing Tomb Raider.
Lara
Croft. Like a character that I've loved, yeah.
It's a bit of girl power you must get when wearing that costume.
It's very impressive for that. Obviously, I didn't introduce cosplay to the science fiction English people, Eleanor, because I thought it'd be too frightening. But,
I think you've made a mischief.
Do you think
there?
So?
It's quite exciting.
Yeah.
We could have had a themed seminar where we all came,
dressed as
superheroes.
That would have been so good.
Well, all right, I'll put it on the possibilities. In terms of the sort of system, it might be worth through that. When are you next actually out and about, or to use Newcastle vernacular, oot and a boot? Gwyneth.
It's actually next Saturday. Uh-huh. It's at Middlesbrough, it's called Teesside Unleashed.
Well, it has to be, let's face it.
Very good event.
Teesside Unleashed, fantastic. Yeah. Yes, Saturday. I actually will be in Middlesbrough then. I will actually be there on Saturday.
Right,
where is it? Whereabouts in this fabulous town? Because they never awarded a city status. Is this being placed?
I think it's called the Martin Country Club,
Club. Lord above.
Like that, yes.
Who'd have thought it, eh?
It begins with an M, I don't know that. It looks like something off The Shining.
That's probably Middlesbrough and a whole range of ways. Oh, sorry, but after the city result, I just don't want to talk about it. Okay, Jessica, go. Those last two questions, because we've got to squeeze in Katie Grimason and a little touch of Phil Leonis as well. So much to actually do. Go, quickly.
Have you enjoyed your slot here on the midweek drives this evening?
I have done. It's always nice to chat.
Good.
And will we be hearing from you in the near future?
Yeah.
Hopefully, yes.
Excellent.
Definitely.
Listen, if part of the marriage deal is you can't do these correspondence things, I'd axe it there. I mean, it's bad enough no stormtroopers, but please.
Yeah. Letting us down.
It's outrageous. Gwyneth Griffiths will return. Website, Gwyneth, how can people get in touch with you if you want to actually book you as a cosplayer extraordinaire?
Just on Facebook, Jen Tate Cosplay.
Jen Tate, JenTate. Cosplay. Emma's already doing that. I'm sure she'll like it.
Taking a note.
Oh, the excitement. So we're going to use the excitement of A Flock of Seagulls and Iran as a bit of a music bed as we say, Katie Grimason, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello, I'm well, thank you.
Very good. You graduated, of course, last year with American Studies to your name and a fine upper second class honours degree, currently based in Birmingham as a search engine optimiser. In the studio, we've already... I think, Emma, you've spoken to Katie before.
Yes, she has.
And that's right. So, do you think her advice in terms of being a midweek drive artist has paid dividends?
I think Katie has inspired me to be a better midweek drive art.
Oh, thank you.
And Jessica,
of course, you
echo that as well.
Of course, she's so inspirational. Thank you, Katie. Thank you.
People thought her shoes were going to be too big to be fitted, but you know, they managed to nurse the thing. A bit like Doctor Who companions. Yeah, it's moving all sorts of ways. Ellen O'Brien has been making her debut on the show today. She's had 1 hour and 37 minutes 16 seconds.
I'm sure I'm yet to be inspired as well.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You mean we haven't done any inspirational stuff for you on the show so far? Well, she is from Hull. Anyway.
Wow.
Okay, Katie, your little task now is, what question would you like us to put? We'll note this down. You might be listening. Hopefully he is. But what would you like to say to Phil Dearness, who's up in a few moments from now?
What? Any question?
Anything you like. You know, it's entirely up to yourself.
Ask him if he's missing me.
I'm sure he will be.
In his own way.
Very much.
You can really tell with Phil. I mean, you know, he may well have actually sincerely actually delivered this little number.
Katie Grimason, Birmingham's gift to the galaxy on the midweek drive for Siren FM and more.
But he could have lied.
I love how he goes Birmingham. Birmingham.
Yeah, it could be Alabama. It could be all sorts of things. Anyway, he's up next. Katie, it's been so long since we last featured you on the show, and it's so quick now we have to sort of say happy trails. But what are the last two questions? Try the new two questions, because I don't think you'll know these. Yes, try the
Katie,
new.
Have you ever been chased by a wild animal?
No, I don't think I have, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and in Birmingham as well.
And have you ever tasted sour milk?
No, definitely not.
Who knows?
Really? I'm quite shocked at that. Yes. I was thinking you were going to have to change that question. So
Katie, you need to liven up your life a bit more.
Drink some sour milk. Come on.
We will go to Birmingham in the near future and show Katie Grimason some excitement in sour milk that she will not be expecting. I can see it's going to be happening. Katie, take care. Speak very soon. We'll pass those questions on to Phil Dearness.
Bye.
And that is one of the joys of having a slightly long tune by, of course, the 80s band A Flock of Seagulls. And nothing to do with, of course, the Ayatollah Khomeini or anything else. Iran is in. I walked very quickly. Sort of sped along. Iran. So who's online now, Emma Tinson?
Is it the wonderful, the amazing Phil Learness?
You see, that's the kind of jingle that we just appreciate. And he's still not done one for yourself, I don't think.
I know.
It's outrageous.
How rude. I'm offended.
Welcome, Phil Learness.
You send me a list of all the people that I owe jingles to, won't you?
It's going to be a long list.
I've never done one for Ed Wellman. I mean, I'm just so gun-shy after, you know, doing such excellent work and then having these co-presenters just scattered to the four winds so quickly. It leaves me bereft. I mean, do I miss Katie Grimason? I mean, as I would miss breathing.
Aww. So sweet.
That always manages to coin the phrase effectively. So
and what an interview. What a fantastic interview you just did with her, Alex. I mean, the questions that you asked about how is she putting her experience as a Midweek Drive co-presenter to use in her postgraduate career, mm-hmm. I found that to be scintillating. And, oh, no, wait, that's the question I wish you would ask.
Sometimes the tightness of actually squeezing in Birmingham, England, and Los Angeles, California, in the last segment of the show.
Yeah, Phil, you should see it as a good thing. We had to make more time for you.
Exactly. I really, that's a little of me goes a long way. It really does.
And I take it you managed to catch most of the little production today, which, of course, has taken us from Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Ed Fortune, Jean Bruce Scott, Carrie LaBerne, Gwyneth Griffiths, Katie Grimerson, and now, of course, your good self. Not to mention, of course.
And you would take it incorrectly, then, because, as a matter of fact, I listened to the first 20 minutes, mm-hmm. and I've listened to the most recent 20 minutes, but I missed about an hour in there. Mm-hmm. My father had a heart attack on Thursday last week and has been in intensive care, and I've been working the phones trying to sort out the situation because he's not going to be well enough to return home anytime soon. So we're trying to find a good facility to try to rehabilitate him physically.
Well, obviously it goes without saying we send our positive thoughts and good wishes to you with respect to that, because sadly, Penny Evans, of course, regular correspondent and listener to the show, her mum has passed away, so it happened. Just be positive, that's the important thing. Yeah. Emma has blood taken tomorrow morning, we may never see her again, and I don't know.
It's not quite as extreme.
She's been in the National Health Service right now. No, it's a political point. Never mind. Eleanor, it's the first time you've actually had a chance to speak to the Leonismeister.
Well, hello. Nice to meet you.
So, and I don't think he's ever been to Hull either. So even though
it might be a good thing.
Well, yeah. So any thoughts you'd like to put about, you know, with respect to Phil and, of course, the simply sensational Chill Pack Hollywood hour that he produces every week in downtown Los Angeles?
Well, how are things in LA? I don't know.
How are things in LA?
Oh, we are in the midst of the season of self-congratulation, as I like to call it here in Los Angeles, where, and really the season of self-congratulation in Los Angeles lasts a good 3 or 4 months, and it's just all of us in the entertainment industry patting ourselves on the back for the excellent work that we did. That excellent work that represents such a tiny fraction of all the massive amount of work we really do. So it's exciting. It's Oscar season. It's like Christmas and New Year's and your birthday all rolled into one.
Having a good time then.
It's
unbelievably exhausting.
So does this mean you're invited to lots of glamorous parties?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I was invited to a Super Bowl party where the dress code is dirty sweats. You have to wear like sweatpants and sweats, and they have to be dirty. If they're freshly laundered, you're not allowed in. So is that what you meant by glamorous party?
But yeah, that's exactly what I had on my mind.
And will you be attending this party?
No, I will not. No. Because first of all, I don't own sweats. I'm leasing with an option to buy them, but I don't own sweats, and I'm not an American football fan. At risk of losing my citizenship, not an American football fan. So no, I mean I have watched the Super Bowl in the past, but largely I watch it to see the commercials. But because those are often quite funny, many of the commercials. But no, I will not be attending that particular event.
I watched the Super Bowl last year, and I didn't understand any of the rules of American football. It's so complicated.
If it helps, they don't understand cricket either.
Yeah, I suppose.
He says globally, making that sort of comment.
What's beautiful about it is that as complicated as the rules are, they can still be, as evidenced by this year's playoffs, they can still be manipulated by the powers that be, those rules, to affect the outcome of the game in whichever way the powers that be want that game affected. So in that regard, it's no different than international competitions involving real football, what we call soccer. So that's the good
news. No, I liked that you called it real football.
Yeah, but I mean, so it's every bit as corrupt as sports with far less complicated rules, I guess is what I'm saying. So that's the good news.
Secret Crystal Palace fan as well.
Anyway, I am a Crystal Palace fan, yes. I am. I mean, I also identify as an Aston Villa fan.
No, really? Grief.
I do. Well, you know why? I had to pick a team when Crystal Palace got relegated one year. I needed to have a Premier League team.
No, that's wrong.
Exactly.
You can't do that.
Just sense of loyalty.
Oh. I mean,
well, because at that time, especially, you've got to realize that this was in the 90s, and so it was very tough to get games. The matches were only available here via satellite, and they would only be available early in the morning, and there was no chance ever to get any matches involving non-Premier League teams. So it's viewing is a little more enjoyable when you do have some kind of rooting interest. So I decided I would look at what team had like gone the longest without winning a cup, and it had been the Villains at that point. So I followed. I like rooting for the underdog.
Mm. Fair enough. I think that's nice.
Yeah. So, give them a chance.
But I don't even know what Crystal Palace's colours are. Do we know what their colours are?
Pretty much the same as Aston Villa's, actually. Kind of claret and
blue. Claret and blue, yeah.
Okay, well, that might have been also actually why I picked it now that I think about it. Because I bleed those colours. I bleed them. Yeah. So,
it's a good reason.
Well, it's a shameless reason. Plug there for Lily Holloman's guest star slot, which, of course, was this week on Shameless, and a cracking speech she actually did. So hats off to Lily Holloman for doing great stuff there. All wonderful material. But we need to ask you, because it was put to me earlier today, what about this rumour that The X-Files is coming back for a miniseries? Is that going to excite Dean Hackland, or is it a case of, no, I'm still off to Australia?
Well, first of all, I appreciated all the emails that I got about whether this rumor was originated by us, because almost every rumor that gets discussed is something that we've already covered on our show 9 months prior. There is no miniseries format decided upon yet. It's still in the very early stages, but the reboot talks. And they call it a reboot, but it's not a reboot. It's a sequel, because it's going to have the original actors playing the original roles. So in some form. Now, I don't even remember what your question was, but I will answer the question that I wish you'd asked, which is, if the lone gunman, played by Dean and his friends Bruce Harwood and Tom Braidwood, if they will return, because supposedly, of course, they were killed off in the final season of The X-Files in an episode called Jump the Shark. But there has been a 10th season of The X-Files released in comic book form. Chris Carter, the creator of The X-Files, has gone on record as saying that the stories in this comic book series are canon. They are officially part of the story, and the lone gunmen are revealed to actually be alive in the comic book series. So I would imagine the Dean would get a call. And absolutely.
And yet, I'm just wondering, actually, Jessica, do you remember The X-Files?
As in from the documentary?
Actually, the truth is out there. Obviously, riffs on it.
From my own personal experience.
The X-Files.
I think I might have watched them with my dad when I was younger, but
In New Zealand?
Know. Yeah, I remember it being broadcasted in New Zealand, but I'm not sure if I remember watching them.
Eleanor, The X-Files?
Scully used to be on TV. I used to watch it all the time.
Well, there we are. And
there always has to be one there. I've never seen it. I've heard of it, obviously.
Didn't get to Surrey.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can actually like the Chilipack Hollywood Hour entertainment website. I just noticed that. You actually do that with a whole range of things. Normally I go straight to the Chilipack Hollywood Hour site itself, but that's actually Dean Hackland with the title.
You know, before we let go of the X-Files conversation altogether, it's important to point out, I think, historically, that although it's an American-produced show, it was popular in the UK before it ever became popular here. In fact, its popularity in the UK and in certain international markets is what saved it from cancellation in its first season.
1994.
And then it won the Golden Globe for Best Dramatic Series at the beginning of its second year. And that's what really led to American audiences finding it.
There we have it, you see. And I presume you missed all the conversation we had with Ed Fortune about his review of City on the Edge of Forever, the graphic narrative version of Harlan Ellison's original script.
I did. However,
you can access the podcast.
I can listen to it in the podcast, and as I do so, I will probably drink a cup of coffee out of my Christmas gift that I was given that is a Mirror coffee mug.
Now, clearly, we're talking about Spock with a beard. We're talking about the alternate reality. We're talking about the other dimension that actually we go into there, Mirror. And, of course, we're talking about, you know, the interrelationship between Sulu and Uhura and of course, the classic scenario of the Captain's Woman. But anyway,
there is a wonderful book. There's a wonderful book that's been published. An artist decided to reimagine each of the episodes of the original 80, including the Cage, as if they had been theatrical releases, cinematic releases in the 1960s, and he designed a poster concept for each one of the episodes. And there's a book, a wonderful book, that has all these posters in it. And the artwork is phenomenal, and this coffee mug that I have has a recreation of the Mirror poster.
Genius. And I know the one of which you refer to. It's great stuff. Rachel Warren's back on the show next week. Natalie Tuck's on with us tomorrow morning, together with, of course, a special Lincolnshire Agricultural Society show thing, and indeed, on the updated version, a new Poptabulous event, which I was going to mention to Katie Grimerson, but time was so tight because we had to fill in so much sort of fill. Sorry, Katie.
Fill in so much.
Very good. Would you, Eleanor, like to give me a number between 3 and 27, please?
11.
It's where the universe will actually take her, and this is what will happen.
The secret behind miracles is that the one performing them begins without any knowledge whatsoever of exactly how they will succeed. Yet still, they begin. When you move, I move the universe. Once again, taking action saves the day.
Very important. Taking action saves the day. Goes for writing dissertations as well. Anyway, Phil, would you like to sort of quiz the team as to how they found the programme? Because obviously they've been here since 5 o'clock, you know, UK time, and it's now 6:54 PM UK time.
It's past our bedtime.
Exactly. You're amazing.
Team, how have you found the programme?
I'll go first. Because, you know, I'm the most important. I've found it really good. We've packed a lot in this week. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how we've managed that, but
physically,
we've had such
impossible.
A variety. Right. We've had music, we've had theatre, we've had sci-fi stuff. It's been great.
Jessica?
Yeah, it's been a great variety, and I am also in awe of how much we've covered just in the 2 hours.
I'm exhausted.
The girls were talking about how hungry they are before. But yeah, no, it's really good, and it's such a privilege speaking to all these wonderful people.
And you get the Party for Sirens Award tomorrow night as well.
Oh, yes.
Eleanor.
Well, it is my first time on the show. I've had a brilliant time, though. As I say, I was surprised at the amount that's been covered. We've spoken to a lot of really interesting people. And I hope that you'll have me back at some point.
What do you think, Emma?
I think she's passed.
Well. What do you think, Phil Lianis?
I want to know whether Eleanor has been chased by a wild animal.
I have. We were talking about that. I've been chased by a goose, and it was the same goose on about, like, 10 different occasions.
Wait a second. A wild animal? A goose qualifies as a wild animal?
Well, you don't have a pet goose, do you? So surely that makes it wild.
Yeah. Actually, one of my housemates had a pet goose at one point. But
okay.
Okay, then. I can confirm it was a wild goose.
Do children in the UK ever play the game Duck, Duck, Goose?
Yes.
Not with a real
goose. Do you notice that it's not like bear, tiger, that game?
Bear,
tiger.
I see what you mean. There's no, like, peril.
I don't
this
know.
Is
yeah,
mild
can
peril.
Be,
can
be,
you know, here's the thing. Being chased by a wild animal, it seems to me that if the concept is being chased by a wild animal, there needs to be some kind of awful ramification of getting caught.
What, like you've got your arm chopped off?
There was an awful ramification.
But the goose.
It was chasing me for a sandwich.
Phil, just let it lie. All right, just.
No, I don't know. If you get caught by the goose, you know what you get to have for Christmas dinner. That's what it seems.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Okay. We haven't put out that challenge for Jessica's flatmates. The bottom line, Jessica, was they've been listening to the programme. Rather sort of come about it. If they want to come on board the Midweek Drive, then they should,
yes.
They should contact
I'm
us.
Sending out that challenge.
I just sort of sit there as a sort of backseat driver. It's there for you. Sort
exactly.
Of that's it. That's a wrap for Leonis. Many thanks indeed. Thanks to the aforementioned Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Ed Fortune, Jean Marie Scott, Carrie LeBurn, Gwyneth Griffiths, Katie Grimison, and Phil Leonis. And thank you, dear listener, for being with us. Thank you for the team, Jessica Ward, Emma Tinson, and Eleanor Bryan. That's it. It's a wrap. We're out with Into the Woods, James Gordon and company. No one is alone. Can we say bye-bye?
Bye!
Bye!
Mother cannot guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you.